Das Bourbon ist Gemütlichkeit, right? So we've got a, this is a home feeling. So let's keep it that way. So we're going to not only hear about the history of how bourbon became bourbon, but we're actually going to see, feel, hear, smell, and taste how bourbon changed from the 1700s to the whiskeys and the bourbon that we know today. So I hope that it's eye-opening for you, and that after we do this tasting, you really have a better grasp of just what bourbon is and these other great American whiskeys. And by the way, I proudly say, and I, you know, because all of the distillers in Kentucky, we know each other. I'm not a distiller. I go out and talk about it. We have great distillers, Parker and Craig Beam. Jakob Johannes Boone from Deutschland, who came over. So they're descendants from him. They're our master distillers. Their cousin, Freddie Noe, over at Jim Beam. And then our friends, Jimmy Relich over at Four Roses, and Jimmy and Eddie Russell over at Wild Turkey. Chris Morris at Brown Foreman in Woodford. These are all friends and competitive, right? But we also like to know when we have something over the other person. Heaven Hill is the only distillery, major distillery, that makes every style of American whiskey. So we're the only distillery that can do this tasting. So I'm very proud to lead you through this tasting, starting on the top left of your tasting mats. So when we talk about the start of what became bourbon, you have to talk about what Evan Williams was making in 1783, and what Elijah Craig was making in 1789, and what Jakob Johannes Boone was making in 1795, and Elijah Pepper in the late 1790s. Basil Hayden, another from Deutschland, who came over in 1788. They were making whiskey, and they knew they were going to make beer and whiskey. These were farmers. These were folks that knew the traditions and were trying to preserve their grains. And also, as we know from over in history, water was the liquid of last resort. You didn't want to drink water out of a lake or a stream. It might have diseases. So you're more likely to make a beer out of it. You're more likely to make a wine or a cider from the peach trees and the apple trees that are growing. You know, it's the same tradition that's happened all over the world throughout history. And then that beer, we're just talking about putting it in pottery and crocks, right? So it's not going to last very long. It's not the beer we make today. So if you distill that beer, just like you would distill the peaches or plums or apples and make brandy from that wine, same thing. What grew in Kentucky? And they didn't know what grew there till they moved there. But they found that corn grew very well. Actually, I live in Louisville, Kentucky, which is named after King Louis. The French royal family helped us defeat the British in the Revolutionary War in the late 1700s. So my town was named after King Louis XIV in 1780. That same year, in order to thank the French, because we didn't have any money, right? So we just named stuff after them, right? So it's an easy way to massage the French, right? So Bourbon County was named. And Bourbon County, named after French royal, the House of Bourbon. So, and corn turns out to be the grain that grows the best in Kentucky. Some folks had come from the north in Pennsylvania, in Maryland, in New York. You know, the United States ended where we were. We were actually part of Virginia. We weren't even around back then. We didn't become a state until 1792. So when Elijah Craig and Evan Williams, we were part of Virginia. But Louisville was there in 1780. And Bourbon County was there in 1783. And they were making whiskey. And this was the style of whiskey that they were drinking. This is our Tri-Box series. It's not available here in Austria, but we brought this over to illustrate this to you. Because this is corn whiskey without age on it. This is the style. So we're going to transport ourselves back into time. And today, So just think about this. This is what Evan Williams and Elijah Craig were making and how people were drinking it in the late 1700s in Kentucky. Before you taste it, I will warn you, this is 62.5% alcohol. So don't just knock it back. Because we call this tri-box, because when the distiller, it comes off the still, that's what they call it. They're trying it out for the box. So that's why this is called tri-box. I will tell you the recipe of this, the mash bill, is 80% corn. The modern law of corn whiskey states that if you make corn whiskey, the minimum amount of corn should be 80%. Then we have 10% malted barley. We use malted barley in at least 10% in every one of our recipes, because according to our master distillers, Craig and Parker, that's the minimum amount you must use to convert those starches released in those grains into fermentable sugars. And then we have 10% of rye. That's going to tamp down all that sweetness, because barley's sweet and corn is sweet. You need a little bit of something to tamp that, to balance that out. But this is no barrel aging whatsoever. This is off the still and before it goes in the barrel. But what are you smelling? What grain? What are you really smelling here?
Yeast.
You're yeast. But there's a lot of corn. And you're really getting that corn. If you don't smell it as much, when you taste it, it'll be very front of your palate, and you'll really taste that corn. Since it is 62.5%, it's really strong. So if you're getting too much of an alcohol taste, I encourage you to put a few drops of water into it. And to any of these spirits, you can always add water at any time to get it to where you want to, where it's pleasing for you. We taste them all at their bottle strength for demonstration purposes. But don't ever be afraid to add water to any of these, especially this one since it's so high in proof. It might bring out that corn flavor more.
That's
a 65-foot still, so 65 feet tall, which is like 20 meters. 20 meters. And we use a continuous column still, made right there in Kentucky, in my hometown in Louisville, called Vendome. They make the stills for all the distilleries around where we are. So they're all of similar heights and similar design.
And this is standard, this is regular strength that comes out from the still?
Great question. All of our whiskeys at Heaven Hill, no matter what recipe we're talking about, we come off the first distillation at 125 proof for 62.5%. And we come off the second distillation, which goes into another still. Because in the first one, the first distillation, we're putting grains and beer and everything into this. We're pumping everything. We don't separate the grains from the beer. That's one of the advantages of using a column still instead of a pot still. So that is the first distillation. The second, that we separate the grains from the water that doesn't turn into the alcohol, okay? And that goes into the second distillation, and that's just liquid. So we don't need a column still. We use a hybrid still between a column still and a pot still. We call it a doubler. This is the second distillation. We're doubling the distillation. And we take that 62.5% first distillation, and we distill it the second time to 135 proof, and that would be, 72.5%. Every one of our recipes. 135. By law, if you age any of these products, it cannot be stored at more than 125 proof. So in order to get it down from the 135 to 125, we add deionized water. And then it goes into the barrel. By law, we can bring these up all the way up to 160 proof. But nobody does. The only one that does is Woodford. They bring it off at 158. But remember, they're triple distilling and using pot stills. So they, it's gonna, it's, the more time you distill it, the higher it's gonna get. You remember back, you ever seen cartoons or anything listed? Like when George Washington also made whiskey, same time Evan Williams and Elijah Craig are. And George Washington's making what we would call today a rye whiskey. Now, I know this because his recipe was written down. It was 60% rye, 35% corn, and 5% malted barley. We would call it a rye whiskey. They were just calling it a whiskey, just like they weren't calling this corn whiskey back home. They were just calling it whiskey. Because that was, you know, if you go to Scotland today, they don't say, let's have a Scotch whiskey. They just say, let's have whiskey, right? So same thing was happening back then. So, but George, he was, we know he got 50 cents a gallon for twice distilled whiskey from Mount Vernon. And he sold it to the cavalry, to the army, because he was a general and a president. And as we all know, if you carry great power after you become a president or the head of a country, you still need to make money, and you want to leverage that and make more money. And he knew that a soldier got a daily ration of whiskey. So he became the supplier. Imagine that. Right? So, I mean, that's just the way it works. So he sold the army whiskey that he made in Mount Vernon. He had somebody make for him. He didn't have the passion. He was just one of the money. He got 50 cents a gallon for twice distilled. For four times distilled whiskey, he got $1 a gallon. I assume that was for the officers, right? My assumption. So when you see old drawings of jugs that have two X's on it, that means it was distilled twice. It would have been a lower proof. The four times distilled whiskey would have had four X's on it. And it would have been distilled four times, each time driving the proof up, each time cleaning out that spirit just a little more. So we would equate that more to a vodka today. Of how many, the more times you distill it, the better it gets. So think of this back then as more like vodka. But they still called it whiskey because it was made from grains and the tradition. So that's where we start. So these folks are making whiskey. Evan Williams, Elijah Craig, the Beams, the Haydens, the Peppers, they're making whiskey. Just like we would all get reputations, like different people got reputations for making wine, like good wine. Other people got reputations for making good beer. My dad made really good chili, soup that we have back home. You know, some people have different reputations. So they keep making that. All these farmers were making whiskey. So it was a lot too, projects. Where did these distilleries, how did they get the folks with the demand? Because these are just little farmers. And if every farmer is making whiskey, you know, well, the country's also growing at a nice rate. Early 1800s, they learned from folks like George Washington, and in the early, like in 1820, for a good example, we have the Erie Canal being built, so boats can do major trade up in the Northeast. They learned from the army, and they said, it's a horrible job. Nobody wants to do it. So you got to entice people and incentivize them to come and work at a place away from your family. So you give them a place to live, a little barracks, right? You feed them every day, and you also give them a ration of whiskey, just like they did in the army. So the Erie Canal and different projects in the United States were built with whiskey because they gave each person up to a quart a day, almost a liter a day of whiskey. So another reason why it's one of our, we call it our native spirit, is because the country was built on a lot of drunk people, right? hopefully they weren't too drunk. But anyway, that's where some of the demand came from. So you can see that whiskey needed to be supplied, not just by little farmers, but people who got reputations, who had business savvy, had business wherewithal to put that together. And folks like Evan Williams, Elijah Craig, J.W. Dant is another name that comes up. Henry McKenna, people who come in, he came over from Ireland and set up and made whiskey. So that kind of a demand. When those folks in Kentucky needed to ship the whiskey out, they weren't just rich people like George Washington. But George Washington, who had contracts in hand and money in hand, when he wanted to ship whiskey out, he did it like everybody else did and used a barrel. Well, he was rich. He just built a cooperage. He had people, he had slaves on Mount Vernon, so it was cheap labor for him and easy for him to make barrels. But the folks in Kentucky weren't really rich. So where did they get their barrel? Well, they would go to a store, a supply store, a general merchandise store, and that store would have barrels that had other products that were delivered in them. And they used those barrels because it was already built. Well, you can't really use a barrel that didn't have liquid in it because they dry out. Have you ever seen a barrel or had a barrel in a bar or a count and you see that the hoops fall off of it and it just starts falling apart? I always joke to my friends, a barrel without liquid in it is kind of like me on a Saturday night. It loses its integrity. So they had to use a barrel with liquid in it. And for the most part, back in those days, there wasn't refrigeration, so they used a brine, or like pickle barrels. But you can see that held liquid in it, and they wanted to use that over a cracker barrel, which didn't have any, which kind of lost its integrity. But you didn't want to put your good whiskey into a pickle barrel. So they scraped the inside of that pickle barrel, and to further sterilize it so it could receive this great whiskey that they made, they lit the inside of the barrel on fire. And that is the big game changer back then, which changed our whiskey from being just clear whiskey that you just might, you know, belt back after working hard or just pour it on your wounds if you've been hurt, but to whiskey you might sip and savor next to a fire with your friends and become something special that we can start just drinking socially. And that's the next evolution of bourbon, which is mellow corn. Mellow corn is taking the same whiskey recipe that we just drank, but putting it into a used barrel, like they did back in the late 1700s, early 1800s. Because the modern law of corn whiskey states that if you age corn whiskey, and you don't have to, we have brands that are not, it's one of the few categories of whiskey that does not have to be aged. But if you age it, you cannot use a brand new charred oak container like we do with bourbon and rye. It must be in a used container. So just like 200 years ago, let's drink whiskey from 1810, 1815 in the style. This wasn't made in 1810, but this is the total style. This is one of the few whiskeys of the world you'll ever taste from that era, representing that era. This is still available in Wall Street? Not yet.
Okay.
Hopefully after today. But I'm so passionate about this category because it's a lost category. And people didn't know where it fit. Well, this is a great illustration of where that fits. So it's the same recipe. This is bottled at 100 proof, so 50%. So it's not the 62.5. But you can feel what that barrel did. You can taste. It doesn't have the big vanillas and the big honey and the big maples and caramels of our modern. We'll taste that later on. You can imagine that people's worlds changed when they tasted this. And so when those barrels, so you see the picture of the Evan Williams barrel right there, and that picture of that barrel right there. They shipped these barrels down from Kentucky. And you want to guess what county? But the city was called Maysville. The city's still there. It's right outside of Cincinnati, Ohio. Does anybody remember the great jazz singer Rosemary Clooney? George Clooney's aunt. She was a great jazz singer. And she lived in Maysville. So her family, the Clooneys, are from right up there. But that county used to be part of Bourbon County. It's not today because now we have 120 counties. Back then there were four. But it was part of Bourbon County. So that was the port. And you always put on the end of the barrel, you always put the port that it was shipped out of. So they would have written on that barrel, Old Bourbon, Kentucky. Well, that was the port. And of course, in the barrel, you got to list the contents because you don't know if there's crackers in there or sorghum or what. So they would put whiskey on there. So when they wanted to make sure that they were going to get, instead of this whiskey, They wanted what came out of that barrel. So they'd say, give me one of those good bourbon whiskeys from Kentucky. And they just started associating that this was the eight stuff, not this stuff. So the name started to stick. I want bourbon whiskey from Kentucky, when it was just where it was from. So as I joke in Kentucky, you know, it was a good mistake. We didn't plan for it to be called bourbon. It just happened to be associated with this. So I say everything we did good in Kentucky all happens by mistake. Right? But it's a good mistake. And you can taste the difference and taste that this is a beautiful mistake. We also at Heaven Hill are proud to make this. We acquired this brand. We purchased this brand from a distillery that went out of business in the 1970s. And we've been making it at our distillery ever since. When you look at this label, I'll pass this bottle around if you don't want to look at it. You will see two things. First thing is this crest here. This is the Medley family crest from Owensboro, Kentucky, who made this whiskey. So we have not changed this label one bit. That has nothing to do with our family, or has nothing to do with our distillery. But in Heaven Hill, we preserve a lot of things, and we also don't spend money to change a lot of things, which is part of being family-owned. Why change it if it doesn't need to be changed? And you'll also notice underneath here a date, very small, and it says 1945. So this is the original label from this brand from 1945. And some folks might look at this bottle and say, well, it doesn't look very high-end. Who would want this on the back of their bar? You know, it doesn't look very classy or sophisticated. But we're not going to change this because this is historic. And we're going to keep this just like this. And if you don't like it, that's fine. But you have to appreciate the great quality of the corn whiskey inside. Because this is a one-of-a-kind whiskey. This is the only bottle and bond straight corn whiskey made in the world. And I'll go over what bottle and bond means in the next evolution. But just keep that in mind. There's a great craft distillery out of Texas right now. It's called Balcones. I don't know if anybody's heard of Balcones. You might not see it because it makes such little amounts. But they're hanging their hat on making good and different styles of corn whiskey. So it's shining a big spotlight on this little brand that a lot of people didn't take seriously 5-6 years ago. But when you go to New York City and to San Francisco and to Chicago and Boston, this brand is really coveted by the mixology crowd and the cocktail crowd because of the history, because it's bottled and bond, and because it's also a brand that it's a different flavor profile than anybody's ever tasted. People know the taste of rye whiskey, and they make cocktails with that. And they know the taste and the flavor profile of bourbon whiskey, and they make cocktails with that. But this is something new for them to experience and to craft different drinks and cocktails. So they really like this. So I'll pass this around if you like, or you can see the different dates and the different things on it. I think it's amazing, amazing whiskey. And you can also note the difference in the colors. The next whiskey we're going to taste is the next evolution. It's also a brand that's not available here right now in Austria, but it is Evan Williams, a name you know. And it's different from the black label. But you can look at these two. This has been aged in a brand new charred oak container. This is bourbon whiskey. 4 years, 100 proof. This has been aged for 4 years and is 100 proof in the bottle. Yet look at the difference in color. This has been aged in a used charred oak container. And I just said, just like 200 years ago, the modern law, but there wasn't a law back then, but the modern law of corn whiskey states that you must age it in a used barrel. The reason for that, if you age it, anything made from corn, and age it in a brand new charred oak container, the corn flavor goes away and only the sweetness remains. And you have bourbon or rye whiskey. So if you age it in a used charred container, and there's another option, you can age it in a brand new uncharred container, the corn flavor remains. and you have a different category called corn whiskey. Any questions on that?
I think the label is an
eye-catcher. It is an eye-catcher. I love the label. You know, I worked
at your original label of the Free Pool Champagne.
That, or Old Brand Whiskey.
Pretty old that. Yeah.
So, it's just an older stuff. Old Granddad?
Yeah.
Mine too. Old Granddad Bottle and Bottle is my first bourbon. I'm going to pass it around that way. So, the next evolution. Bourbon has a name from those barrels. Kentucky has a reputation because of those barrels. We also know by 1857, it was called bourbon. We don't know exactly what year, but I do know by 1857 it has a reputation and a name. Because there was a gentleman visiting Kentucky for his employer, and he was, you know, I'm flying home Wednesday. It's going to take me, you know, 15 hours or so to fly back to Kentucky, maybe 16 hours. Pretty amazing. And I can be from this far away and be home. It took him probably 2 or 3 weeks by horseback to come to Kentucky. And then he's not just going to spend a few days there. He's going to spend 4 or 5 weeks. And then it's going to take a while to get back. So he was really embedded in the culture in Kentucky. While he was there, he was so struck by the people in Kentucky and the culture, he wrote his employer back a letter. And in that very short letter, but it tells me a lot, he wrote, "Everywhere in Kentucky, sir, I'm greeted by gentlemen, gentlemen with their hearts in their right hand in mine, and surely in their left, a bottle of unequaled old bourbon." And that was 1857. So if I look at that letter, bourbon has a name, Kentucky has a reputation, and the culture has a reputation, the people for drinking it and sharing it with their friends and their colleagues. So, we're on a good track, right? Well, right after that we have the Civil War in the United States. 1861 to 1865. Not a lot being produced, not a lot being shipped, for obvious reasons. After the Civil War, President Lincoln has to rebuild the country. Charleston, South Carolina is pretty much, and in Atlanta, are pretty much burned down to the ground. They got to rebuild these cities, and he levies a big tax, a big tariff on whiskey, which wasn't taxed very high before, but now was a big tax. There were people who got into the whiskey business because whiskey was a big part of the culture. As I said, it helped build the country. Soldiers got rations, people who built the country. But there was different ways. There was no laws. I could just pretty much take neutral grain spirits, pretty much vodka, and add flavors and colors to it. And we know by the historical records that they added iodine for color. They added flavors like cherry juice and prune juice for flavor and to soften it up. They actually had recipes of what to add, and you can find those. It's pretty incredible. But those are three great products. They called that compound whiskey. Then there were people in Kentucky, and you know, Indiana had a lot of whiskey too. North Carolina, Tennessee. You know, we weren't the only ones making it, but we made a lot of it because we were right there on the river too. And they made what they called straight whiskey. And straight whiskey didn't have those flavors and colors added to it. It came from the barrel. There were people who were very proud of what they did. And then you had these other people who just wanted to get into business to sell whiskey and make whiskey-flavored vodka. So, at the end of the 1800s, there was a couple distillers. One of them was the name of Ezra Brooks. Ezra Brooks, another gentleman by the name of Edmund H. Taylor, E.H. Taylor, and together with the Secretary of Treasury of the United States, they passed the first consumer protection legislation laws having to do with anything. And why was the Secretary of Treasury involved? Well, he hired the agents who went in with the keys and levied the taxes. So he was an important man. He was also from Kentucky. His name was John Carlisle. And E.H. Taylor, who was raised by his great uncle, who was the president of the United States before that, called Zachary Taylor. He was from Louisville, Kentucky, where I live. Cool. But anyway, they passed the first laws. It was called the Bottle and Bond Act of 1897. So Oxley, Hood, and Steep, and Muncie. Good with my numbers, right? So is that good? Okay. So, now there was a law. And this is before we had laws about our food. 9 years before we cared about the safety and regulation of our food in 1906, in the Pure Food and Drug Act of 1906, we passed a law about whiskey, which stated that if you called it bottled and bond, as this product says at the top here, and as the mellow corn says right here, bottled in bond, and as Rittenhouse Rye says, bottled in bond, what that means is that now it just can't be any whiskey from anywhere with anything in it. It's got to be aged in the appropriate type of barrel for Fioriata. So for 4 years, it has to be aged. It can't just be 45% or 40% or 47% in the bottle. It must be bottled at exactly 50% or 100 proof every time. It can't be, it has to be from barrels that were filled in one distillation season, almost like a vintage, if you will. And I think most importantly, but very importantly, it must come from one and only one distillery. And further than that, you must list that distillery on the package. So if you look at this bottle, it says the distillery is DSP KY1. See that?
Yeah.
My glasses are somewhere. If you find some blue glasses, they're just reader glasses. DSP KY1. DSP stands for Distilled Spirits Producer, which we are at Heaven Hill. We distill spirits. We distill spirits. We're KY, which is Kentucky, short for Kentucky KY, and one because we're the best. Just happens to be our number. But I have to throw that in there, right? Just because the Bernheim facility where we are has been around there since the 1850s, and so we have the oldest number. But anyway, that's just kind of funny. So, it also says DSP KY31 on there. The law gets so specific that if you bottle it in a separate facility than you make it, you must list that on there. We had a fire in 1996. It destroyed our distillery. We purchased another distillery in downtown Louisville, DSP KY1, in 1999. So we make our whiskey in a separate place than we bottle it. And that's how specific that law gets, that you must list the bottling facility. So you can imagine going from a consumer walking into a tavern near like Planters, which would just have barrels stacked in the back with like Old Crow on it and Henry McKenna and J.W. Dant. Brands that were around back then that would have been living on barrels. Now, you don't know that if that proprietor of that establishment got halfway down that barrel, and what if he wanted to do something not very good, which would be like make more money and just add water to it and fill it back up and still sell it as whiskey to you, and you might not know the difference. Because we weren't bottling things. Only the blending, only the compound whiskeys were bottling, because they didn't age anything. So they were putting it right into a bottle. So now two things happen. Quality standards are on the label, and they tell you quite a bit. They don't just tell you who made it. They tell you about how old it is, and they tell you how strong it is. And then we have people who are employed, because we didn't have bottling lines before, but now we have employment. We have more people working at distilleries. If you read, and you should read, Fred Minnick's book, Whiskey Women, he talks about how women helped and made great strides with the whiskey business. Women were better at the bottling lines than men were. Apparently, we're pretty clumsy, and we drop bottles, and we don't put labels on very straight. Women were very meticulous about it, and they did better. They were coveted jobs. They paid as much or more than the men made at the distillery, because this is the end result, right? So they were very good jobs. They just weren't, you know, that. So those things happened. So that became the good stuff. So let's taste. It was passed in 1897. So you got 4 years to comply. So in 1901. So let's taste whiskey. Not just the style of what they were drinking in 1901. Let's drink what they really were drinking. 4-year-old, 100 proof, bottle and bond whiskey. So, some blur.
That's white label.
This is white label Lemon Williams. Which is different than the black label. We're going to taste the black label here in a little bit. But 4 years old. This is 5 years old. This is Fofiar. This is Furia. 100 proof. This is 43%. 5 years old. That's 4 years old. 50%. That's the difference. You say, why would I need two of them? Well, they're different ages, different strengths. You would make different cocktails. You would make Oh, the horse's neck would be very good. It's my favorite drink. So, Evan Williams bottle and bond. Then, up north, Pennsylvania, New York, Maryland, they're having an evolution as well. And of course, they're making what we would call a rye whiskey. When, in 1876, when Jenny Jerome from Brooklyn, she was the Lady Randolph. She married a guy from England. And he was very political. He was a lord. So she becomes the Lady Randolph, right? This is 1876. They have a party for their friend Samuel L. Tilden, who's happened to be running for the United States president, running against Rutherford B. Hayes. As a welcome cocktail, she has them making something special for her friends. She says, use an American whiskey since this is an American election. We're going to use and then they decided to use, with that, Italian vermouth. And of course, they always used bitters in drinks back then, too. And because the party was held at the Manhattan Club in New York, the Manhattan cocktail is born. This was 1876, so they weren't using a bottle and bond, but certainly they were using a rye whiskey. And so that's why Rittenhouse is one of the only ones available. But of the handful of rye whiskeys available, it is the most sought after, most allocated rye whiskey in the world. And one of those reasons is because it's in the traditional pre-prohibition style and prohibition style and post-prohibition style of bottle and bond. Yes?
Can you explain bottle and bond?
Yes. Bottle and bond, 4 years old, from one distillery, barrels filled in one distillation season, and exactly 50% alcohol, 100 proof every single time. Bottle and bond, the name came from, also there was an advantage of bottle and bond, and it had to do with the taxes. Okay, so John Carlisle, who was a treasury agent, if I make whiskey today, I used to have to pay taxes on it today. But if I put it into bond, I can wait 4 years before I have to pay taxes on it.
What is a bond?
That was the bond.
What is a bond?
A bond is like a certificate or a bond that comes due, like a certificate.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they had a different seal on it. When it went in the bottle, it was. Before that, barrel it just sat there. This is a brand new label. So you're one of the first people to see the new label for Rittenhouse. I think we had one of the old labels here. Right here. Here we go. So, when we taste this style, okay, I'll give you the... this is 40, the last three are perfect to taste together because they're the same exact age and the same exact proof. All right, same strength. So you really taste the differences in the grain. The first one was mellow corn, 80%, 10-10. You got the second one, which is our Evan Williams, which is 78% corn, 12% malted barley, 10% rye. And now you're tasting Rittenhouse Rye, which is 51% rye, 39% corn, 10% malted barley. A traditional, straight, not too far off of George Washington's. Remember, his was 60, 35, 5. 51% rye, 39% corn, and 10% malted barley.
Green label, green house.
That had to be a special bottling from another company because we only looked at the distributors.
Yes.
Can you get the ratio of the
Williams?
78% corn, 12% malted barley, and 10% rye.
Thank you.
So, you've just tasted something, three whiskeys, that no other distillery does. I'm not going to say they're never going to do it. But we're the only distillery that makes three different bottle and bond products under three different recipes. One reason why cocktail bars mixologists, bartenders liked a bottle and bond is because if you start with something that's 40% or 43% alcohol, and you mix it with, and you stir it in with ice, and you start adding other ingredients like sweet vermouth or whatever, it waters it down. And the flavor dissipates. But if you start with 100 proof, the flavor holds up better in that cocktail. It's one reason why Rittenhouse is one of the most sought after ryes. It holds up better than what you might say another great brand and a very historic brand, which is Old Overholt. Old Overholt rye whiskey, I'm sure most of you all are familiar with. Okay, but that's a 40%. You have to think about it in a different way when you're making it a cocktail. It also, because of the demands of that company to divert the whiskey to different higher mark, they have lowered the age of Old Overholt. So on the label itself, the neck label, it says 3 years old now. So it went from a four-year-old product to a three-year-old product. And it's not 100 proof, it's 80 proof. That's why this continues to be the most sought-after rye whiskey, because when you're going to make a cocktail, you're going to make it with a 100 proof product. The Rittenhouse? I'm not familiar with that. Because, you know, we've done special bottlings for different distributors. It could be something like that. But I don't know. It could have been a single barrel years ago. We just haven't had it. Rittenhouse is available in Austria.
Yes.
Yes. The bottom three are available. The bottom three on your tasting mats are available right now. The top three, not yet. So just to go, to show you how much I love Bottle and Bond, and I didn't just get this yesterday, okay? This is 8 years old. I got this 8 years ago. I've been talking about Bottle and Bond a long, long, long time. Even when I worked at Jim Beam, when they had Old Overholt, and I said, why don't you make it a Bottle and Bond? Everybody would want it to be a Bottle and Bond. Writers would write about it. Bloggers would blog about it. People would talk about it. It would be amazing. And they did. They decided to divert that liquid to Knob Creek rye, which they make a lot more money with, which is fine. But they were a publicly held company, and they had pressure on them to make money, and they were that was a good way for them to just divert the same liquid they had and make more money. We're a family-owned company. We don't have that pressure. Trust me, Max, our owner, wants more money, right? But he's not going to do that. He doesn't have to do that. And we're not going to, I'm going to say never. Hopefully, we're in a better position with this Rittenhouse than we were. There used to be a problem getting some allocations. There still might be little hiccups here and there. But we've doubled and now tripled our allocation in how we paid rye. Being a family-owned company, we saw the rye craze before anybody else did. So not only can you get more of this, it's at a higher strength and better quality with the bottle and bond. To further drive home the illustration of bottle and bond, I always like to tell people the different styles of whiskey. So you have the broad category of whiskey. The broad category of whiskey, which is pretty much defined and accepted all over the world, is a fermented mash of grain, from grain. So not from fruits, okay? Not from grapes, not from plums, not from strawberries, okay? Not from apples, but from grain, distilled to 190 proof, or 95% alcohol. It kind of sounds like I just described vodka. So to further distinguish what whiskey must be aged stored in oak. Now we're starting to become whiskey. But further than that, it has to look, smell, and taste like whiskey, which means the way it's worded is it must have the attributes generally attributed to whiskey. So it has to be the aroma, the color, and the flavor of whiskey. Because I just described vodka to you and putting it into oak, it might need some help to achieve that. So with just whiskey, I could add caramel color or flavoring or sugars to make it look so, taste so, and smell so. That's whiskey. Then you've got probably the next restricted category, which would probably be Canadian whiskey. Canadian whiskey has to also be made from any kind of grains, distilled, I believe, to 190 proof. That might be, it's pretty high. But it must be aged in oak, sounds the same, for a minimum of 3 years. So now we got a further restriction of a minimum age of 3 years. You can still add caramel colors, favorite, but Canadian whiskey, you can also add like sherry or port wine or any other type of spirit. 9.909% can be that. So a little bit more restrictions, as we've been in Canada too. Blended Irish and blended Scotch can come from many distilleries, distilled distilled from different grains. They usually use a corn wheat mix when it comes to the neutral grain spirit that's in there. A minimum of 3 years. They can add any other spirits, but they still can add caramel coloring, and often do. Then you've got single malt. Even more restrictions. Can't just come from any distillery. It has to come from one single distillery from one grain. Oh, now we're getting even more restrictions. Minimum of 3 years in oak. Doesn't say what kind of oak. You can still add caramel colors to achieve the color profile that they want as well. Then you get to American corn whiskey. We have American blended whiskey, which is basically vodka, the general category. Corn whiskey. Minimum of 80% corn. Minimum. Can only be distilled to 160. So 80%. That's way below the 190. You're going to taste more of the flavor from that grain, as we did in the first tasting. If you tasted it, you tasted corn. So much lower restriction on the distillation. If you age it, and you don't have to with corn whiskey, you can sell it unaged. But if you do, it must be aged in a used, charred, or brand new uncharred container. So even a further restriction on the oak, which no other whiskey I've described yet has. And you can't put it in that barrel at more than 125 proof, even more of a restriction. And then if it says the word straight, which was passed in 1909 after the Bottle and Bond Act, I can't add anything but water to it. So no caramel color, no flavor, no sugars. Straight whiskey must be aged for at least 2 years. And now I've got a year restriction on straight and nothing but water. So that's the most restrictive of any whiskey I just talked about. Now let's talk about bourbon whiskey and rye whiskey. Bourbon whiskey and rye whiskey, they share a definition. The only thing that's different is the 51% of. So if you're making bourbon whiskey, it must be at least 51% corn. If I'm making rye, American rye whiskey, it must be at least 51% rye. If I'm making wheat whiskey, which we make a Bernheim original wheat whiskey, it must be at least 51% wheat. Now, all the definitions the same after that. It must be distilled just like corn whiskey at less than 160 proof or 80%. It must be stored not just in any kind of oak or two types of oak. It must only be stored in a brand new charred oak container. The most restrictions of any of the whiskeys I've described so far at no more than 125 proof. Okay. Then, if it says straight, it has to be at least 2 years old in those containers, and it can't have anything but water added to it. That's the most restricted whiskeys in the world. But then, if you go further, and you want to have the further designation of bottled in bond, that must be aged in the appropriate types of containers for 4 years, bottled in exactly 100 proof, from one distillery, from just barrels filled in one distillation season. So this is the most restricted whiskeys in the world. Of the most restricted whiskeys. So why wouldn't I want the most restricted of the most restricted whiskeys in the world? And why wouldn't I want every single one? And here they are. So, that's why I like bottle and bonds. Now, we're coming into the modern styles.
Excuse me, one question.
Yes.
About the straight. If you would leave away, you leave the bottle like this, but you leave away the word straight, would you put then by normal Zucker or Pala?
You could. So it's the question was, if I didn't put the word straight on there, can I add color? Yeah. Yes.
You can call it bourbon.
Bourbon is a different law. It passed in 1964. We're not there yet, but there was the modern law of bourbon also states you can't add anything but water to it, but that's just bourbon. But straight whiskey is the main word there.
But if it's written straight bourbon.
Straight bourbon.
Yeah. If you leave away the straight and you leave the bourbon, can you put color?
You can. There are blended bourbons. So you have also neutral grain spirits in it. That's another category. Blended bourbon is another category.
But it's very important that the word straight is on it.
Straight is one of the most important words you can find on an American whiskey bottle. And when you find a lot of craft distillers, and they're doing a fabulous job. Some of them are doing an incredible job. Hudson Baby Bourbon is one of them. They're coming out of New York. But they're aged less than a year. They do not earn the word straight. So they do not have the word on there. I do not think that they're adding caramel color. But because the word's not there, they may. Balcones is aging theirs for 2 years, but the word straight is missing from it. They're using toasted and brand new barrels, which don't give many much color, as we've seen. Yet theirs is the color of coffee. I don't know if they're adding color. I have questions for their distiller. I don't know. But I know as a consumer, when I look at quality stamps and quality marks, there's only 7 words I really got to look for. Kentucky, we make the best whiskey, right? And we have the water from the limestone filtered water. So Kentucky's more than just bragging rights. Kentucky means we also have the seasons. So we get extreme colds in the wintertime, extreme heat in the summertime, and a lot of spring, a lot of fall. So a lot of movement in now those charred oak barrels, giving it a great flavor profile. If I made whiskey in Florida, it would be all hot, no cold. If I made it in Minnesota, it would be all cold and no hot, so not enough movement. So the word Kentucky is almost like cognac or armagnac when it comes to a region that's famous for the expertise and topography and the geography of what's going on. Kentucky straight, 2 years old, one. Bourbon, the category, whiskey. And then when I see the words bottled and bond on top of that, even more. So, after we get all these great laws, we got prohibition. We can't make whiskey for 14 years, 1920 to 1934. After 1934, when our company starts, Heaven Hill and the different whiskey producers in Kentucky, they had to decide what arena they were going to play in the whiskey market. You could play in the arena where Sam Bronfman from Canada, who made Seagram's blended whiskeys, against a multi-millionaire, what we would call a billionaire today. Or you could go and play in the little safe pool or safer pool of straight whiskeys. Smaller and a little higher quality. A lot higher quality. They usually waited for bottle and bond. So we made our first barrel at Heaven Hill December 13th, 1935. That means to make straight whiskey, we couldn't bottle the first straight whiskey until December 13th, 1937. We bottled that as Bourbon Falls, straight bourbon whiskey. It was 2 years old, wasn't all that great, but it was at least getting money coming this way. In 1939, December 13th, 1939, we bottled the first Heaven Hill bottle and bond, 4 year old, which you can still get in Kentucky, but be quick because we discontinued it. Okay. But if you watch the movie Forrest Gump, anybody watch that movie? Remember Forrest Gump? Remember Lieutenant Dan? Yeah. Lieutenant Dan, who is they're partying in Times Square at New Year's Eve, and then when he goes down to Mississippi, to Forrest, and he is in the wheelchair, he says, "I'm going to be your first mate." Okay. He's drinking a bottle of Heaven Hill 4 year old bottle and bond.
How do you know?
Because it said it, right? I told you, words on labels don't lie. And I have two chances in the movie to see it. And the funny thing about that I know for sure, that I can guarantee and David can guarantee, is that our owner didn't pay money to be in that movie.
I guarantee it.
They researched what would be a popular bourbon in New York and New Jersey and in Florida at that time in the 1970s. It would have been Heaven Hill, or late 60s, early 70s, Heaven Hill Bottle and Bond. It was a historic whiskey. And so that in the 1939, 1940, that quickly became the number one selling bourbon in Kentucky, putting our little distillery on the map. We don't have enough whiskey to supply bottle and bonds. And they would be redundant. You know, Heaven Hill is 4 year old, 100 proof. So we came out with the white label because, you know, the black label's the number two selling bourbon in the world. Us promoting Heaven Hill doesn't help this brand. You know, it kind of does if you know that we make this. But, you know, from a business, sometimes we do make business decisions to try to help drive business for other brands. We do want to fuel the reputation of this. And back home and all over the world, this is a very respected whiskey. But sometimes because it's a mainline whiskey, people don't respect that this one as much. And so sometimes it takes something to shine a little bit of a light on it. And I think, you know, did you all enjoy the bottle of bond, 4 year old Evan Williams? I think, you know, this is 5 years old, 86 proof. If you like this and if you like Elijah Craig 12, they're all the same recipe. They're just different years, different ages. So you can see why you might need more than one of the same recipe and where it lives in your world, in our world. So after Prohibition, bottle and bonds come back. They're respected. Bourbon becomes a distinctive product, and they lay all the modern laws of bourbon down in 1964. 1964 is when the container ships are built all over the world, and the world becomes a smaller place. And so the laws of say the bourbon had to come from the United States was set then. So, you know, and they chose bourbon because they didn't want to say rye whiskey is the native spirit of the United States because that's what Canadian whiskey is made from. They didn't want to say that barley is because we don't use much barley in our whiskey, so that's Irish and Scotch, and, you know, they're the ones that started the whole thing. The Irish did. So, obviously, if you're going to name a spirit, your native spirit, it's going to be the one made from the native grain that grows there, and corn is what grows and things, so that's what makes bourbon the distinctive. You think it might be corn whiskey because you got to have 80% corn there, but bourbon was by far more popular and still is more popular than corn whiskey. So they chose bourbon for that. But it was a time in the 60s after World War II, you got the soldiers coming back from Europe who enjoyed London dry gin. And then there was a movie with a gentleman, 007 spy, that liked martinis. And even though it wasn't written in the books, in the movies it became vodka that he was drinking. So and different things in the culture was happening in the United States. So in 1976, vodka overtakes whiskey as the number one selling category in the United States. And has never looked back. It's still the number one selling category. I am proud to say that does not happen in Kentucky. Most other states in the United States, vodka is the number one selling spirit. But when you come to Kentucky, and I welcome all of you all to come, you should come, bourbon is the number one selling spirit. Not just American whiskey, but bourbon is the number one selling spirit in Kentucky. So here's to walking the walk and talking the talk, as we say about it. But if you own big brands of bourbon in 1976, do you want to guess what the number one selling bourbon in the United States and the world was in 1976?
Old Granddad.
Old Granddad was a big one, but it was his brother brand that was bigger than that. Started with Old as well.
Old Crow.
The number one selling bourbon. Old Granddad was big. Early Times was a monster. Ancient Age. A lot of people will say Four Roses. Four Roses was a blended whiskey in the United States until 2001. It was one of the biggest blended whiskeys out there. You know, Seagram's 7, Seagram's 5, Black Velvet, Calvert, all these Kessler, big blended whiskeys. But Old Granddad, Old Crow, Ancient Age, they're huge brands, Early Times. Where do those brands live now? They're either non-existent or they're shadows of their former selves. Because they didn't do anything bad or anything, they just made a wrong decision. They decided because gin was so big, and vodka and blended whiskey was so big, the American consumer was telling the bourbon makers, we want a lighter spirit. What's the only thing you can do to straight whiskey to make your spirit lighter?
Lower the proof.
Add water. From 100 proof down to 86 proof. Or to 80 proof. Back home we have an expression, when you 86 something, you've killed it. You've done away with it. And that's what happened to bourbon. It got killed. Because it went from bottle and bond, the highest thing, to 86. And now, most of the mainline bourbons are down to 80 proof because of the pressures of making more money. Remember, Jack Daniels used to be 90 proof? 10 years ago, it was 90 proof. Then it went to 86 proof, and now it's down to 80 proof because they're a publicly held company. They got to have more and more and more profits. And people who just drink Jack Daniels usually do drink it how? Jack and Cola or Jack and something, whatever.
Jack Daniels Green Label.
Jack Daniels Green Label was 80 proof, but now they're redundant. Now they're both the same. So anyway, that's another example of the difference between a family-owned company and a privately-owned company and why things are done that way. So we come now to the last two tastings, and that's the modern. Yes. Yes. Very good question. Because a lot of people are confused about that. Jack Daniels is a Tennessee whiskey. Tennessee whiskey, and it's a state law, not a federal law. So Jack Daniels falls under the broad category of whiskey, that first one I described. But in Tennessee, and they're fighting over this, they're suing each other over it. You know, Brown-Forman and Diageo are suing each other over the definition of Tennessee whiskey. So we don't know where that will land. But right now, it must be made in Tennessee. It must be aged in brand new barrels. Everything's pretty much the same for bourbon. But they go through a 10-foot column, which is 3 meters tall, and they take the maple tree, sugar maple trees that grow in the area, and they cut those down. They cut them into little pallets and little ricks, and they actually use Jack Daniel's White Dog, and they catch it on fire. And at a certain point, they get all this charcoal there, and they scoop it up, and they put it into this column, three-meter column. When it comes off the still, they go into that column, and it spends up to 10 days in that column, dripping through without water being pressed through or air being pressed through. It's just gravity. And then it goes into the barrel. Well, that adds a little bit of a smoky flavor and a smoky quality to it. So, I mean, if you spent 10 days in a vat of maple charcoal, you'd smell smoky too, right? So that is adding. Some people think that's filtering. They call that charcoal mellowing because it adds. It's a way to put age on something at a fast rate, even though it takes 10 days. But when we say we charcoal filter, that's just taking the little particulates from the barrel. We've been aging these barrels for 4 years, 5 years, 10 years, 12 years. The insides of those barrels, which have been charred, some of that, those little particles come loose in that barrel over that time, and we're just filtering that out. They go through, like, there's like five like coffee filter type of things. They're big coffee filters, but they're there, and it catches all those particulates. So it's not adding flavor, it's just filtering out those particulates. Tennessee whiskey adds a flavor. I'll use the word never twice. I'm never trying to say you'll never see, right? But I doubt that you'll ever see Jack Daniels put an age statement on anything. Because the whole idea of making Tennessee whiskey is to use a microwave and to put age on it fast. Because in 1865, when they were making that Tennessee whiskey, it was a dangerous time to be alive. You didn't know if you'd be alive in 4 years. Yeah? So you didn't know if you'd be alive in 4 weeks. Why age it for 4 years? So let's put a little flavor on it fast. And that's their style. And it's a great style. But you won't see a 12-year-old Gentleman Jack or a 12-year-old Jack Daniels, because it defeats the whole purpose. So we do. We stand apart because we will age it long. Now, Dickel is putting some age on their Tennessee whiskey, but they're Diageo, and they like age. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say you'll never see Jack Daniels put an age on a whiskey. See how long that goes. But that's the difference. Does that explain the difference between those two?
I got one more question.
Sir?
Why is never had Heaven Hill on any bottle? It's all different brands.
Yes.
Because it's, you bought them? Or how did they develop?
We created all these brands. The question was, why isn't Heaven Hill on any of these bottles? It's a good question. It's a question I don't think I can fully answer because I'm not one of the owners, because they make a lot of these decisions. Obviously, Heaven Hill is a name that they like a lot, because they Heaven Hill is named after the gentleman whose farm they bought, where our distillery and aging facilities are. Actually, it's one word. His name's William Heaven Hill. It's all together, one word, not separated. William Heaven Hill. When you come to Kentucky and visit our visitor center, there will be a brand called William Heaven Hill. And it'll be a special bottling just for that visitor center. But the reason it's separated to Heaven Hill is our owners, at the time in 1934 when they took out the license, they were in the department store business. You know, they didn't know anything about whiskey. They were just putting the money out for it. That's why they hired the Beams to be their distillers, because there were Beams at every distillery. And after Prohibition, you know, they only have one or two at Jim Beam Distillery. There's like 10 more Beams left over who knew how to make whiskey. So if you wanted a good whiskey, you went to a Beam. So they hired the two, you know, Harry and Joe Beam to work over there. But they still didn't know this venture was going to work, that this business was ever going to get up and running, because they had to wait. They didn't have any brands. They had to wait at least 2 years to make straight whiskey and 4 years to make bottle and bond. So you don't even know if it's going to work, right? So a person in Frankfort, Kentucky, which is our state capital, they typed it up wrong, and they separated heaven from hell. And it was going to cost $10 more to get it corrected. And they said, we're not going to do it, because we don't even know if we're going to be around in 4 years. So it kind of stuck.
But it said even Williams since 1783.
Yes, because Evan Williams first made whiskey in Kentucky in 1783. When we launched this brand, they decided came out in the 1950s. They decided they were going to make a higher mark. And back then, Heaven Hill was the bottle and bond. It was the whatever, but they wanted to come out with an older different mark. They researched and found that the first licensed distiller in Kentucky was Evan Williams. We're not related to the Williams in any way or the Craigs. But they found and wanted to honor that person with their brand. So, and then as marketing decisions get made over the years and different decisions are made, and this brand gets known as the number two selling bourbon in the world, it says distilled by the Evan Williams Distillery. Those are marketing decisions and other decisions that are made by other people. I wish it said Heaven Hill because the owners are proud of it, but it gets confusing to the consumer and a lot of people. So there are, we do make business decisions and good decisions and bad decisions, but those are just what happens in all reality.
And the good Elijah Craig is always somebody who
Elijah Craig
lived a long time
yes.
ago.
So Elijah Craig was launched in 1986. You remember the first, the first single barrel bourbon came out of 1984, which was Blanton's out of the Ancient Ace Distillery from Elmer T. Lee, God rest his soul, who passed away. Let's do a little cheers, a little some pour, a little prost to Elmer T. Lee, who lived to be 94 years old last year. We miss him dearly every day. He came out with Blanton's in 1984. And it was the first single barrel, which means everything is bottled up from one single barrel. So it can taste slightly different than the next barrel sitting next to it. And that's the magic of single barrel. It was Parker Beam, our master distiller, in 1986. And these people were all friends talking to each other. And he came out with the first small batch. We didn't even call it small batch. It actually took Parker's cousin, Booker No, the next year in 1987, to put a name to it. Small batch. That it wasn't from one single barrel. It was from a mingle of many barrels put together from certain areas of a warehouse that were special. And so single barrel and small batches were created in the mid-80s. So the last two tastings, this Evan Williams, is an example of a modern mainline bourbon. A mainline bourbon is we would call Jack Daniels or Jim Beam or Evan Williams. It's our mainline. It's the engine that drives the train. Okay, it's what keeps the lights on. So it's a big brand and we're pushing it. But we're not Jack Daniels and we're not Jim Beam. We're pretty big. We're the second largest bourbon. And we do spend some money. You know, we got a little Evan Williams signs here and stuff over here. But we don't spend the millions, and you can ask our partners. We don't spend the money. But what we do is we set our mainline bourbons and other bourbons stronger and older than our competition. So when you see Jack Daniels, which is now 80 proof or 40%, and it's pretty well accepted, it's 4 years old, and Jim Beam, which stays 4 years old and 80 proof or 40%, this is 86 proof, and this is a 5-year flavor profile. Even though there's no age on here, this is another big point. But when you put an age statement on it, as we do with this 12-year, every drop must be 12 years old. So when we run out of this, it's not if we run out of this, it's when you, because it's so popular, right? But we could run out of this. Because if we run out of 12-year-old whiskey, it's gone. Or we have to wait till it becomes 12 years old. So brands like Maker's Mark and Woodford Reserve and Evan Williams and Four Roses, they don't put an age on because you don't need to have your mainline bourbon come off the shelf or off the backbone. So you go for a flavor profile. There could be 6-year-old bourbon in here from the lower floor. There could be 4-year-old bourbon from the higher floor because it ages faster and it gets more concentrated. So you're not stuck to 1 year. So this is a 5-year flavor profile, 86 proof, which is 1 year and a little bit higher in proof than our mainline competition, which is Jim Beam and Jack Daniels. And that's what sets us apart on this Evan Williams Black. Yes?
How many floors do you
have? We have 7 floors in most all of ours. We have a couple that are pretty old that are smaller. But a 5-story or a 7-story or a 9-story warehouse work exactly the same. So When you age in a warehouse, imagine this building here. This building here probably has a basement. Has a basement? This building here, does it have a basement?
Yeah. It's largest in town, actually.
What's that?
Largest in town.
Largest basement in town. There we go. So this has a basement. Imagine our master distillers send over 3 barrels to your to hear what you would love. We would love for us to do that. And they put a barrel in the very top floor, one down here on the main floor, and one in the basement. And you didn't turn any heating on, didn't do anything, just left it all natural for 12 years. Can you imagine when we came back and tasted those three barrels, that the barrel in the attic would taste different than the barrel in the basement? Well, of course you would. Okay? That is a single barrel of bourbon. If we bottle everything up from the basement barrel and only bottle it from there, and then we list the number on it, like we do on our Evan Williams single barrel, that's one single barrel. And then we barrel everything up from the attic, and we barrel that up just from the one barrel, and we list that barrel on there. That's a single barrel. We take these three barrels and mingle them together and then bottle everything up. You can see where that would taste a little bit more consistent every time we did that. And that's the difference between a single barrel and a small batch. So let's taste the last one, which is Elijah Craig 12. Did you like the black label? Did you? And if you don't, if you didn't taste the difference between the black label and the white label, feel free to come and taste it again. Because it is, they are different bourbons, even though they share a recipe. Let's see what seven more years of aging does to this Elijah Craig 12. This is 12 years old, 94 proof. Distilleries would kill to have a 12-year-old bourbon.
So that's an arrow.
Excuse me? The black label is 5 years old, even though your tasting map might say seven. That's a typo. Sorry.
Boom,
Giara.
Not seven.
He's seven. We have one that's seven.
Anyway, 1783 is available.
Oh, it is available. Today. Okay. Not today. But this is 12 years old. Boom, Giara. And this is, like I said, most distilleries don't have a mainline, a small batch that's 12 years old. We did come out with a barrel proof of this, which is very beautiful. So, Elijah Craig, he was making, was a Baptist preacher who was making whiskey in 1789. The story goes that he was getting ready to ship some barrels out, and his barn caught on fire. And the barn, the fire got put out, but it did damage some of the barrels. And that's how he discovered that charring barrels would be the way to go. That's how it happened for him. It happened for other distilleries, distillers, by the having to use the pickle barrels. It happened different ways for different people. But the story goes, and that's why we honor him with this. So I will end with a toast, but I wanted to ask, and I'll be around to ask any questions on that, but did you enjoy seeing, feeling, smelling, tasting, and hearing the history of how bourbon became bourbon through this tasting?
Oh, yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Now let's do a toast, and thank you so much for your time. I know everybody's time is extremely valuable. And for you all to come and spend a couple hours with us is amazing, and I don't want to overlook that. So thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedules to come visit us at this beautiful account with these beautiful people. But Elijah Craig 12 is a very special product. It was made by a very special person. Parker Beam is our master distiller, emeritus. He's been in the business for Svein Flumsigiana, so 52 years. And he's battling a challenge. He got ALS, what we call Lou Gehrig's disease, back home, and it's a deteriorating disease. So he will never get better. But it's a terrible disease. But he's facing it with very great strength and very great courage, and he's doing fine. But they did a talk about him on the local media. And they asked him, why are you still so active? You come into the distillery and you talk to people. And even though his speech is a little slower than it used to be, and he walks a little slower, he says, well, people, he says, I get good energy from people. I want to meet them. And they're very grateful for what I do. And it's very cool. He also has a farm. He has 200 head of cattle. And he still likes to drive the tractors, because he's always loved to drive tractors and trucks. So he loves to do that. And he says, there will become a day that I do die, And when that happens, though, I hope that it's late in the afternoon so I can get a lot done that day. Right? Cheers.
Cheers.
And as I always end my talks with, do you feel the warmth in the center of your chest? Do you feel that? I always tell people that's Kentucky wrapping its arms around your heart. So thank you for allowing me to talk to you all and to go over the evolution. Dankeschön.